Shaving Schmavings. Retail sales rise again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Looks like we're getting back to our big spending ways. Retail sales jumped nearly 0.5% in April, more than expected, the Commerce Department reports. That's the 7th straight month we've increased our spending. Ratings agencies. We know them as the firms that gave a stamp of approval to bundles of nearly worthless mortgages. Now the Senate wants to have more control over the rating system. John Dimsdale reports.
Right now, banks decide what rating agency will grade the financial products they sell, and they pay for the rating. That led to rating agencies giving their best grades to assets that later turned out to be junk. The bill moving through the Senate would no longer allow banks and other financial institutions to pick their own agencies. The government would do that for them. That takes away the conflict of interest, but Barbara Matthews with BCM International Regulatory Analytics worries it'll give people the impression that
the government sanctions or approves of the ratings in one way or another. Putting the government in the middle of deciding who gets to rate which company is overkill.
Supporters of government certification say it'll open up an industry that's now dominated by three big players to more competition. Matthews says that's optimistic, since rating agencies are expensive to start up and have to hire lots of smart people to do their job well. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Worries about Europe have the markets feeling blue this morning. London's FTSE is down 1.8%. Tokyo's Nikkei Index shed 1.5%. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average ticked down 1% to close at 10,782. Some companies have elevated dodging taxes to something of an art form, a transcontinental art form. In this week's Bloomberg Businessweek magazine, reporter Jesse Drucker follows the money from the sale of a bottle of the antidepressant Lexapro. Good morning, Jesse.
Hi, Stacey.
So we start out with a $99 bottle of Lexapro being sold to someone in Phoenix, and so begins a global odyssey. What happens to that purchase?
Well, about $85 of that purchase ends up with Forest Laboratories, the maker of the drug, which is based in New York City. But the majority of the profits don't stay in New York. They first travel to Ireland because Ireland has low taxes and Forest has a manufacturing facility there which actually makes the pills and then sells them to the parent company, to Forest. Forest, in turn, makes licensing payments to itself, to another subsidiary that claims its tax residence in Bermuda, which has no corporate income tax, and that shifts the majority of income out of Ireland into Bermuda.
So this is all in the name of avoiding taxes. How is this possibly worth it? It seems like it would be cheaper to pay your taxes than to set up six subsidiaries in six different countries and to route the sale through all of these different channels.
Well, you have to remember that the dollar figures here are enormous. I mean, Forest is a company that, you know, last year in 2009 had nearly $1 billion in pre-tax income. So if you can cut your taxes by almost $200 million by attributing income to foreign operations, you know, spending a few million dollars setting up structures like this, you know, clearly there's a benefit.
Jesse, there's a lot of money at stake here, though. You make the point in the article that the government's losing about $60 billion a year because companies have figured out these ways to get around U.S. taxes.
You know, that's an estimate based on data from 2004, and so there are reasons to think that estimate is actually conservative. But clearly, you know, the government is definitely losing tens of billions of dollars a year in tax revenue due to U.S. companies shifting income out of the country.
Jesse Drucker is a reporter for Bloomberg. He has an article out this week on how companies can avoid taxes. Jesse, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Citrix, offering GoToMeeting, allowing people to hold meetings online to collaborate in real time. More at gotomeeting.com/market. By LendingTree.com, tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com. And by Constant Contact, working to help small businesses understand what social media can do for them. Learn more at constantcontact.com/social media.
As we mentioned earlier, the financial reform bill is taking shape in the Senate. Robert Reich is professor of public policy at Berkeley. He's here to give us his take on the bill thus far. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Stacey.
So, Robert, it was week two in the Senate's battle over financial reform. Who's winning?
Well, one winner was the Federal Reserve. Originally, remember, the Senate planned to strip the Fed of its power to oversee banks because it had done such a lousy job before the crash of 2008. But the bill now lets the Fed keep all its authority over big and small banks. You may also remember, Stacey, the criticism of the Fed for keeping secret the payments it made to banks that contracted with bailed-out insurer AIG. Well, a measure that would have subjected the Fed to ongoing review was watered down to a one-time-only audit.
How about the banks? How did the biggest banks come out in this?
Well, the biggest are quite likely to remain too big to fail, Stacey. An effort to cap the size of the biggest banks was voted down, as well as a measure that would have required the big banks to pay into a fund to be used in the event that a big bank was at risk of failure. A requirement that big banks spin off their lucrative derivative trading businesses is still in there, but it may not survive beyond Tuesday. That's when Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who introduced it, faces a primary challenger from her left. Also still in the bill is the so-called Volcker Rule, barring big banks from trading on their own accounts, owning hedge funds and private equity funds. The banks hate this and will try to narrow it.
Polls show huge public distrust of Wall Street, and midterm elections, of course, are only months away. Why isn't the Senate doing more?
You got to remember, the street, Wall Street, that is a major campaign contributor to both parties. Besides, Stacey, most of the public doesn't understand the details of finance, so it's relatively easy for the Senate to sound tough while creating a lot of loopholes.
Robert Reich is professor of public policy at Berkeley and was the Secretary of Labor under President Clinton. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Stacey.
And finally, first there was McDonald's dollar menu, then Subway's $5 footlong, and now Taco Bell has unveiled the cheapest meal yet, the $2 combo. It includes a burrito, a medium soda, and a bag of Doritos. By the way, a salad at Taco Bell costs more than twice that. Luckily, healthy eating is its own reward. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.